We've been talking about American higher education this week. I did a survey on Monday of the various threads and themes in American higher education in history. The last 2 days we've talked about issues in American higher education, financing, and then yesterday on issues deriving from diversity, curriculum and political correctness and that sort of thing. And these last two sessions will be on the church colleges. And I want to start today by having us learn a little bit about the array of ELCA institutions. And then we're going to talk about what makes a college a church college. So you can be thinking about that, because that's a subject on which there are a lot of different opinions, and which people, I think, ought to think about what makes a college a church college. But I want to begin at the beginning. Who knows when the first Lutheran pastor arrived in the United States? You want to guess? Oh, you're not even in the right century. Not even in the right century. First Lutheran pastor arrived in the United States in 1639, actually. 1639. And that's kind of astounding, I think, in some ways. And this Lutheran pastor's name, I don't remember, was in fact a Swede, if that gives you any comfort. Surprise, surprise. I mean, it could have been a German, but it wasn't. It was a Swede. And it's interesting that the Lutherans did very little about higher education in this country for a long, long time. The very first kind of mutterings about getting Lutherans involved in higher education occurred, as you might imagine, in what state? What state would you guess?
Minnesota.
No.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Not everything Lutheran happens in Minnesota, Beth. Not everything. No. It was actually in Pennsylvania. Dickinson College, which some of you may have heard of, was founded by the Reformed Church, really for Scots-Irish immigrants of Reformed background. But there was a man associated with Dickinson who very much wanted the German Lutherans in. And so he went to the German Lutherans and said, we'd like to put some German Lutherans on the Board of Trustees and make this into sort of a Lutheran college too. And so the German Lutherans were moderately interested, but apparently nothing happened of that effort. I mean, they changed the charter of Dickinson to make for a Lutheran presence in the college, but apparently it was never followed up. So this man who was interested in higher education among the German Lutherans then decided, well, maybe they better start their own college. So he went off and gathered a group of people and actually got a charter for something called Franklin College, which actually never existed. I mean, it had a charter, but it never actually functioned as a college. But that was not until, believe it or not, 1787. I mean, that's a long time. That's 140 years after Lutherans were here in an organized way. The roots of the first institution that you may actually have heard of, that having gone through several transformations still exists today, was the founding of the first Lutheran seminary in the United States, which was Hartwick Seminary. And this is kind of a sad story. Hartwick Seminary was actually founded and began operation in 1797, and it existed in Upper New York State. And very late 19th century or so, early 20th century, gave birth to Hartwick College in Oneonta, New York, which was a Lutheran, an LCA institution for many years. And then Hartwick Seminary moved to New York City in about 1941, and very soon thereafter ceased operation. And in 1960, Hartwick College disassociated itself from the Lutheran Church and is no longer a Lutheran college. And it did that because the state of New York set up a financial aid program for residents of New York to go to colleges, but they had a very strict rule that it could not be used at any church-related college. And so the trustees of Hartwick felt
rightly, wrongly, I can't second guess the people, because I don't want anybody to second guess me 40 years from now, rightly or wrongly decided that they had to choose between remaining a Lutheran college and accepting New York State scholarship grants for students, and so they ended their association with the church in the 1960s. So it's kind of sad. I mean, the first Lutheran institution of higher education that actually functioned in this country no longer exists in either its seminary or its college. I mean, the seminary doesn't exist at all, and the college exists, but is not Lutheran. Who knows the first Lutheran college founded that still is functioning today as an ELCA college? What would you guess?
Well, Dickinson still exists, doesn't it?
But it's not an ELCA college.
St. Olaf.
Say?
St. Olaf.
No. I mean, you're wonderful to put in those plugs, but we were really jotty-come-latelys in this. It's in Pennsylvania. I mean, the country started in the East, you know, not in Minnesota. The first settlers did not arrive in Minnesota. Anybody guess?
I have no idea what it means.
Gettysburg. That's absolutely right. And the charter of Gettysburg, and this is, I need to switch colors here. The charter of Gettysburg dates from only 1832. So, I mean, as you can see, this is 165 years after Harvard. 165 years, that's a long, long time after higher education got started in this country. And so it's kind of surprising in a way that that's so late, given how much Lutherans have been involved. I mean, the Lutheran Church began in the university, you know, and so that's kind of interesting. The history of Gettysburg is instructive. Gettysburg Seminary was started by a man named Samuel Schmucker. Who was a German Lutheran pastor in Pennsylvania, and he started Gettysburg Seminary in 1826. And he discovered, as he tried to prepare young men for the ministry, because of course there were no women being prepared for the ministry in those days, that they didn't know enough to learn theology. They didn't know literature, they didn't know writing very well, they didn't have the basic education in order to benefit from his instruction in seminary to prepare to be pastors. And so he said, I'll fix that, I'll start an academy. And so they started Gettysburg. It was actually called Gettysburg Gymnasium at the beginning. In order, it was really then a remedial institution for the seminary. Its only function was to help prepare people to go into Gettysburg Seminary, which is kind of an interesting and instructive thing. And then from that, a variety of Lutheran institutions began for several different reasons. Some of them, such as Luther, were founded in order to prepare people for the ministry. That was their function, was to be a channel for young men to go into the ministry. Others, like St. Olaf, were founded for quite different reasons. St. Olaf was founded not as preparatory for the ministry at all, but to help young men and women. St. Olaf was coeducational from the very beginning in 1874. And by the way, the founding pastor, St. Olaf, took a lot of guff for wanting to educate women. His congregation thought that was an enormous waste of time, energy, and money. And why in the world would any idiot want to teach women anything, since they weren't going to perform any useful function in life that required education? And I mean, really, it was a very, and he said, it was really interesting, he was an autocratic. He and his wife ended up in court because she had some money inherited from Norway, and under the rules of Norway, it belonged to him as her lord and master, and under the laws of America, it belonged to her, and he wanted it under Norwegian law, and she took him to court and sued him. I mean, so he was not really a very gender-sensitive man, I don't think. She actually moved out and left him and went to live with a doctor next door at some point. But, I mean, these are the kinds of things you don't find always in the history of the church colleges.
Did she get the money, though?
Did she get the money? I believe she did.
Yes.
I believe she did.
sent the money in with them.
So who cares? Who cares about him if she got the money? Right? But he founded St. Olaf in order to prepare young men and women for lives in whatever they were going to do. He had a sense of Christian vocation, and he wanted people to learn whatever skills they were going to learn to function as Americans. He wanted these young Norwegians to make the transition into a new society in a variety of occupations, and so St. Olaf was founded really, if you like, for secular purposes, but as a Christian institution, because he wanted these people to learn whatever they were going to learn in a setting in which they had both some ethnic roots and religious roots. So the colleges were founded for quite different reasons. And I'm going to skip now over a vast sweep of history and come up to the moment just before the merger of the ELCA in 1987. And at the time of the merger, which involved the AELC, which had no colleges at all, so if I don't talk much about the AELC, it's because they brought no colleges to the merger. The ALC and the LCA both brought colleges to the merger. And I want to talk for just a minute about the different patterns in which the ALC and the LCA colleges had relationships with the church, because it turns out that's kind of important for what's happening today, which we'll talk some about tomorrow when I get up on my soapbox, as I promised you. But I thought before we do that, it would be fun to see if we could identify all the ELCA colleges there are. Anybody know how many there are? How many are there? 26? Not quite. 9. 29. There are 29 colleges, and I'm going to see if we can name them.
Include seminaries, or is it?
No, just colleges, not seminaries. We'll see if we can name them.
In
order to do this, it helps me, because I have a hard time naming them, it helps to do it geographically. So I'm going to suggest, we already know one, and that's Gettysburg. I'm going to suggest we start in the east and see if we can get all 29 up here. Okay, we're in the east. Stick in the east.
Isn't there a Luther College in New Jersey?
There is not. There's a Lutheran. It's not called Luther, though. What's it called? Uppsala. In East Orange, New Jersey. Right.
Susquehanna.
Sure, she's a day.
Now, Maida, don't cheat now. Susquehanna. In what state is that?
What state is that?
What state is that in? Pennsylvania. Selins Grove, Pennsylvania.
Wittenberg.
Oh, you're getting a little Midwestern on me now. But
yeah, that's
we got lots more in the east. Is it DU?
Yeah.
Lots more in the east. There's one in New York City. Staten Island.
Where?
Wagner. Bob.
Yes, that was it, Wagner.
There are lots more in Pennsylvania. There are more in Pennsylvania.
Muhlenberg.
How could we forget Henry Muhlenberg? Then there's a funny one in Pennsylvania. Teal.
Where did that word come from?
I don't know, actually. I truly don't know the answer to that. Going down the East Coast, we get to the Carolinas.
Lenore Rhine.
Did I spell that right?
No, we wouldn't know.
There's another one in the Carolinas. South Carolina. Newberry. Is that about all in the east?
What about Roanoke?
Ah, Roanoke, Virginia, right. Roanoke. That's about all. Let's move now into the Midwest. Wittenberg, we got in Ohio. There's another one in Ohio. Capital, absolutely. Okay, think about that. Illinois?
Augustana,
absolutely.
Is Minnesota considered Midwest?
We're getting there, but we got Wisconsin yet to go. Carthage, okay. All right, now we get to Minnesota, Beth. Valpo's not ELCA. Valpo is technically independent. It is Lutheran, but its most close association is with Missouri Synod. Missouri Synod has a Valpo Sunday every year and gathering in money for Valpo. But Valpo technically is not associated with the church, although it is very distinctively Missouri Synod Lutheran. And now we'll do St. Olaf. Concordia Moorhead.
Gustavus Adolphus.
Just a minute now. I got Gustavus.
Concordia St. Paul.
Augsburg. Concordia St. Paul is Missouri Synod. And I'm not going to try to list all the Missouri Synods. We just write Concordia about 40 times and we've done a lot.
Luther
in Iowa, absolutely. What else in Iowa?
Wartburg,
right?
Wartburg in Iowa.
And there's
Grandview, absolutely.
Waldorf,
good. These are both, what distinguishes these two?
Started out as junior colleges.
And still are.
Grandview's 4 year now.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, see, I've learned something.
5 years.
Waldorf is still 2 years.
Augustana.
Augustana Sioux Falls, right? We got two Augustanas, Illinois and South Dakota. Okay, now come down through the midsection of the country and get to Nebraska.
Dana.
And?
Midland.
And keep going south into Kansas.
Bethany,
right? And then keep going south through Oklahoma into
Texas
Lutheran, tender loving care. Okay, now go west.
PLU.
Cal Lutheran. Oh, I hope we have 36. I hope we have 29 here. We have 28, and I know which one's missing.
How about Pacific Lutheran?
Oh, that's POEA. We got that.
Isn't there a Bethel?
There is a Bethel in the Twin Cities area, but actually that's Swedish Covenant. It's not Lutheran.
So are there only two on the West Coast?
Only two on the West Coast. The one that's missing, I'll give you a clue, is in Michigan.
Oh.
And it's the only Finnish institution we have. Ethnically Finnish.
Suomi.
I should put that up here in the Midwest. Suomi. Up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And there are all 29. Yes, there are only two on the West Coast. I mean, as you can see, these are heavily Minnesota, Iowa, and heavily Pennsylvania. I mean, and that shouldn't surprise you. That's where most of the Lutherans are in the country, historically coming out of the German roots in Pennsylvania and the Scandinavian roots in the Upper Midwest. Which of these were ALC and LCA? And there's a reason for this. I'm not trying to build walls, but there's a reason for this. Can we go right down? And let's just put a check mark by the LCA institutions.
Oh, yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
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 Yep. Yep. Surprise! All the Germans went into the LCA.
Yeah.
Most of them, anyway. Most of them. Not all of them. Most of them.
All of them. On that. Yes.
All of them. Yeah. All the East ones are old LCA. And
yes.
The,
so
yes.
No. Well. Yes. That was LCA.
We seem to have some disagreement.
It was.
And Wittenberg.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
No,
that was ALC.
That was ALC.
Yes, that was LCA. That was.
Carthage?
No.
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 Yes.
Yes.
No.
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 Grandview was. Waldorf?
No.
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 No. Midland?
Yes.
Bethany?
Yes.
Swedish?
Lindsborg
camp? The only place in the country when the King of Sweden comes besides Minneapolis and Washington is Lindsborg camp. Texas Lutheran?
Yeah.
No.
Wasn't it?
No, ALC. ALC. POU?
Yes.
Yeah,
no.
That was
ALC.
ALC, that's for sure.
ALC. Norwegian. That was the old Norwegian. And Cal Lutheran?
ALC.
Actually, Cal Lutheran was both. Both the LCA and, as I'll put a little teeny check mark there, this was a late institution founded, I think, only in the 50s or 60s. And actually, both the ALC, must have been in the 60s, both the ALC and the LCA participated. So that they say that when we went into the merger, the ALC had 12 and a half institutions and the LCA had 16 and a half institutions, and so together that makes 29. Now, the interesting thing, the reason I do this is because the patterns of funding and governance were very different in the two churches. Does anybody know, how did the LCA organize its colleges? How are they related to the church and how are they funded?
Anybody know?
Something about the ownership or something. I can't remember exactly what it is, but this is about the, they were owned by the American Lutheran Church, their colleges were, or the other way around.
There was a very different pattern of governance. That is correct. Not ownership, but funding and direction. And what was the basic difference? Okay, well, the basic difference was this. In the LCA, the churches were synodical. I mean, the colleges were synodical. They related to the church, by and large, through the synods in the territories in which they existed. Roanoke, for example, related to the church exclusively through the Virginia Synod of the LCA. The Virginia Synod Assembly probably elected the members of the Board of Regents of Roanoke. And the funding for Roanoke that came from the church came from the Virginia Synod. Gustavus related to the Red River Valley Synod and the Minnesota Synod of the LCA. That's where they got their money. When you went, if you were a delegate to the Minnesota Synod Assembly of the LCA, whatever they call them, conventions, one of the things you would do is to appropriate synodical money for Gustavus Adolphus College. Bethany, related to the Central States, the old Central States Synod of the LCA. And Pacific Lutheran to the, Midland, let's say, to the, I guess that was Central States Synod also. And this was the Illinois Synod and so forth. In the ALC, the pattern was very different. The colleges uniformly related to the entire church. And the typical pattern was represented by St. Olaf and Luther, in which when the ALC had its convention every couple years, there would come a moment in the convention at which Bishop Preuss would gavel the convention into adjournment and would convene the meeting of the Luther College Corporation. It was the same people sat in the chairs. But the Luther College Corporation, an Iowa corporation, would now come into being. And the same delegates to the ALC convention would then elect new members of the Board of Regents of Luther College. And then Bishop Preuss would say, thank you, the Luther College Corporation meeting is adjourned, and he would bang his gavel,
And he would say, now we convene the meeting of the St. Olaf College Corporation, bang his cap. Same people sitting in the chairs. Okay. And he would say, now they propose for membership on the St. Olaf College Board of Regents, Mary Smith and John Doe. Everybody says, terrific, they're elected. Okay, that's the end of the St. Olaf College Corporation meeting. And in the line item budget for the ALC, you would see funding for the ALC colleges and universities, which would go to the Division for Education, whatever they called it, of the ALC, which would distribute that money from Minneapolis to the 12 institutions. The LCA money for the colleges, the LCA money for the colleges never went to New York. It never passed through the LCA headquarters. Okay? It was entirely synodical. Now, what do you think happened when the churches merged? A mess. That's exactly right. And I got in on the very tail end of that. I came to St. Olaf in 1985, and I got in on the middle of interminable meetings of what are we going to do with the college. I mean, the LCA had one pattern, which was synodical, sort of local control. I mean, the South Carolina Synod of the LCA thought Newberry was its college. It wasn't an LCA college. It was a South Carolina Synod college. I mean, that's the way they thought of it. St. Olaf and Luther had never been seen as a Minnesota district college. These were colleges of the Church International. And so, you know, what happened was people said, well, we can't choose one or the other, so we'll have a mixture. We'll have a smorgasbord of everything, and that's what we have now. We have an absolute smorgasbord of everything. The funding for the churches is so complex that literally no one can understand. I mean, I'm not kidding. There is a formula which takes some synodical appropriations and some benevolence money that comes directly to the church, and it puts it all in the Division for Higher Education in Chicago and stirs it all around and redistributes it in a way that no one understands. And it has to do with the number of students and the amount of synodical support and the number of students of color and the number of Lutheran students and the historical funding that we had when we came into the merger. And I mean, it literally takes a computer. I have served on a committee to try to look at the formula. I wasn't on a committee that designed it originally, but it hadn't been in existence more than a year before people started to tinker with it. And I was appointed to chair a committee to look at the formula, and we literally had to sit there with a PC. I mean, it was impossible to manage the thing. And the governance structures, essentially, they said to the colleges, anything you can work out with the church will be fine. So at the moment, there are only four institutions left that are national in their affiliation. Lutheran, St. Olaf are two of them. So it is still the case, if you're a delegate to an ELCA churchwide assembly, the next assembly will be in 1993 in Kansas City. If you're a delegate to that assembly, at some point Bishop Chilstrom will convene the Luther College Corporation. And H. George Anderson will get up and say, here's a ballot of proposed new regents for Luther College. And everybody, I hope, will vote yes. And then I'll get up and do the same thing for St. Olaf. But there are only four institutions that chose to preserve that structure. Some of them chose to preserve a synodical structure. Others of them chose to preserve a structure in which they are actually governed by an association of congregations. That's the pattern now in Gustavus. Gustavus decided that it wanted to keep as close to the old Minnesota Synod and Red River Valley Synod of the LCA as it could. Well, of course, there is no such thing anymore as the Minnesota Synod of the LCA. And so what they did was they formed the Gustavus Corporation to be an association of congregations, which originally were the old LCA congregations in Minnesota and in the Red River Valley Synod, And those congregations send a delegate every year to the Gustavus Corporation meeting. It meets at St. Peter on the campus, and that corporation meeting elects the members of the Board of Regents of Gustavus and governs the institution. That association is the owner, if you like, of Gustavus Adolphus College. Okay? So we got quite a mess. Yes?
Well, you know, I was so sure that PLU was LCA, but then LCA churches in that area have always supported it.
That could well
be. It's the only one that's there.
The only one that's
and
there.
And so that's why I just assumed, I guess.
Right. But it was ALC, but that there is a lot, has been a lot of mixing, particularly in areas of the country where there's only one. And I think that's why Cal Lutheran, they decided it was silly if there was going to be a college to have it associated with one of the two big Lutheran churches. That was silly in California. And so they worked out a different arrangement for that. But that's absolutely right.
There's somebody in the wrong camp up there.
I do. Why?
Well, I thought you said it was 12 and 16.
Well, it may be 11 and a half and 17 and a half.
No, I'm discounting Cal Lutheran.
Oh. Are there not 12 ALC institutions?
No, there are 11.
Oh, dear. Well, what did we do here? Well, but it may be 11 plus Cal Lutheran.
That was only half of Jeff on Cal Lutheran.
That was only half. Anyway, I may be one off, but it's all forgiven, I hope. I'm not going to take the time I need to do it.
They're all
charged
now. Except when it comes to money.
I know that's
untidy.
But
being that he's a racist, and now you're just going to have to think about it.
Right.
Bring the black She's going to be bothered.
No, we'll figure it out later. I may
back
well.
Back in your room, take a piece of paper.
I may. I want to ask now this. What makes a college a Lutheran college? What does it mean to say Uppsala is a Lutheran college? What are all the possible things that might mean to people?
Well, I think besides just getting a college education, you're also getting some Lutheran theology and some church and stuff in the school.
So you would say, Beth, that you ought to get some Lutheran theology.
Yes. And just maybe services on campus and so forth.
Campus, yeah. Services on campus. What else? What else might be characteristics of a Lutheran college?
Well, for some it's just like running a hospital. And that is that this is something the church ought to do, sponsor some higher education, and you don't have to have particularly Lutheran students or way requirements. That do some go about that far, some of the East Coast, for instance, Wagner? Where there's maybe there are just some church services available.
But, so you would say in some sense a Lutheran college has no marks, or, I mean, it could look just like...
It can look just like any other, except that it's like a hospital, you know, you heal the sick and you just, it's just the service you do to the community. That would be the exact opposite side of it.
If there's no difference inside the hospital, why should the church run it? Why not turn it over to...
Well, because it's a mission. It's something that you should be doing for the community.
But there are lots of hospitals that aren't Lutheran. And if there's no difference between a Lutheran hospital and a non-Lutheran hospital, why bother to have the church run? They're expensive, complicated, a bother. I mean, having ice cream stores is a mission to the community too, but the church doesn't operate. Slight example. Picking up garbage is a service to the community, but we don't do that.
Some of us do.
Some of us do. What other things, if you walked onto the campus of a college that said, this is a Lutheran college, what other things might you expect? Whether or not you found them is a different question, but
I think maybe the morals should be higher on campus. Whether they are or not. I'm just saying, maybe the expectations.
You didn't go to one, though.
Maybe the moral expectations should be a little higher.
Okay, at least expectations.
Let's,
that's good. Yes.
I would at least hope to find 50% or more of the students Lutheran, in the fact that one of the goals would be to educate these people for leadership in the Lutheran, lay leadership in the Lutheran Church.
It would probably be a lot lighter, too, than some of the others.
Not what?
Lighter. Lighter student.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm very interested that you tie the reason to that. I mean, a lot of people would say, I expect a lot of Lutheran students, but not be clear why. And your reason was because you would hope these would be places which would train lay leaders for the church. How high should that percentage be? You said 50%. How many institutions on the list that I erased so Maida couldn't spot my error anymore, how many of those colleges do you think have 50% or higher Lutheran students? Would you guess? Of the 29?
25.
Oh, not nearly.
No.
Not nearly 25. Not even 50%. I can't give you the exact figure, but my best guess for 50% or higher Lutheran, my best guess would be 12 or at most 13 of the 29.
Well, isn't part of that based on where they are? I know when I was at PLU, most of the people that were just coming out of high school and living in the dorms with me were Lutherans. But then you also have all the people that live and around in Tacoma wanting to go to education, and then most of those were not.
Right.
So it's kind of broken down as to how you're going to school there. If you're using it just because it's in proximity to where you live, or
PLU is a good example of an institution that has become, because of its urban setting and the needs for education in that area, has become an institution which spreads a very wide net of service to the community, and so that drives it down. There are institutions, Bob, I sort of detoured your comment a minute ago, but indeed a college like Wagner College probably does not have 5% Lutheran students. Probably not 5%.
Now where was Wagner?
In Staten Island.
Why would people choose a Lutheran college then? I don't understand that. If they're not Lutheran and not necessarily wanting to become Lutheran, why would that big percentage choose that college?
Well, why do those people go to PLU?
Quality of education.
Quality of education.
Vocational.
Vocational things. I think that for some people, I mean, they like the fact. We have a fair enough. We are about 50% at St. Olaf, and Luther is, I'm sure, and Concordia Moorhead are. But we have a lot of Catholics at St. Olaf, and Catholic families have told me we're glad to be at St. Olaf because it's a very high quality institution. I think, I mean, I'm not being prideful, but I think there's no Catholic institution in Minnesota that's as good as St. Olaf, and yet it's a place in which students do worship, and there is a kind of moral community that doesn't exist at other places. So I think there is an appeal to people who are looking for a kind of a church or ethical or moral home, even though they're not Lutheran. What other marks might you expect to find at a Lutheran college?
One of the things you always look for is a physical mark. Two of our four children went, and of course we were happy at St. Olaf, the big church there, you know, and then the Gustavus, the big church building there, and that was kind of the center of activities. So that's a real physical presence too.
Okay.
The bottom line question is staff or teachers?
Teachers.
And say a little more about that.
I didn't say Lutheran, but Christian, I was thinking more.
Is that a prerequisite though, to be on staff with a college? Is that a prerequisite?
Not at most.
No.
It's interesting, the articles of incorporation of St. Olaf still indicate that every person hired to teach shall be a committed Christian. But that's not probably actually the case. It's not a requirement. And again, the colleges differ greatly in how they handle this. At St. Olaf, we do try very hard to explore with people the depth of their religious commitment and interest before we hire them. We don't always succeed in that, but we do believe that you need to have a significant number of biologists and chemists and mathematicians and musicians and historians who come out of a faith commitment. And I'm interested that you didn't say Lutheran. I think, I tell you one of my favorite stories. I think one of the people at St. Olaf on the faculty who was the most committed to the notion of St. Olaf as a Lutheran college in all respects was a deeply Orthodox Jew who was one of the strongest supporters of the church relatedness of St. Olaf that I've ever known. And we had had him on the faculty for several years, a fellow in political science that you may not have known, Bob, who we had had him on the faculty in a series of temporary appointments for people who were off on sabbatical leaves, and there came a time when everybody came back and we had no more position for him. And so he started looking around at other Lutheran colleges. And he had an interview on the phone with one in the East, whose name I won't mention. And he said, well, I'd really like to understand how you see yourself as a church college. And the chairman of the department that was going to hire him said, oh, we say that in our catalog, but it doesn't mean anything, so don't worry about it. Which for him was exactly the wrong answer. He was looking for a place which took seriously being a church college. And so they don't all have to be Lutheran. Yeah, that's right. Any other marks that you'd expect of a church college, Lutheran college?
If you walk on the campus and see the students, I think you'll see many more white students than a lot of other college campuses.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of people that come from Scandinavian backgrounds.
Yeah, that's one that's going to change, but it is certainly the case that it's fairly white at the moment. Can you tell much from the curriculum? Could you look at the curriculum and tell anything?
We should have more maybe religious studies courses, a bigger department than the average college.
And in fact, I'd prefer they be called religion courses, not religious studies. And should they be required?
Some. I think a basic should be. Isn't that like that first one gets some Lutheran theology? I think that they should do maybe a basic course should be required.
They should have some required, and then probably you should offer a major or two in religion. So yeah. That must be an option if you only take one or two, or you could really go into it.
Yeah, I think you would. I think that's right, Gary. I think you'd expect to see a religion major. I think that's right. You'd expect to see that. And at St. Olaf, there are three required religion courses. There are a number of the ELCA schools that have no requirement in religion anymore, but I think most of them still have some requirement in religion. You mentioned services on campus. Daily chapel?
Mm-hmm.
Would you expect that? Do you think you'd find it?
Not at all, probably. The ones that say, well, it's just in the catalog, but we're not really, probably wouldn't have one.
I'm not sure, I don't know the number that still have Bailey Chapel. I would guess probably no more than 10 have Daily Chapel. We do at St. Olaf. It has been required for at least 75 years at St. Olaf. But it's pretty well attended generally, except during final exam week and that sort of thing, when people have other things to do. Okay, those are some of the marks of Lutheran colleges. Let me say just a word before I go on, and that is the Lutheran colleges actually get along very well. You know, we kid a lot about rivalry between the institutions, but they actually get along remarkably well. And I'll give you an example. You didn't remember the name of Uppsala. You remember there was one in New Jersey. Uppsala happens to be located in East Orange, New Jersey, which is the blackest city in America. Of all the incorporated urban areas in America, it has the highest percentage of African Americans. And that's a college that has been in extraordinarily serious trouble. Its enrollment has declined dramatically, has become, of course, very heavily minority. The college decided not to abandon its setting and try to become a suburban institution somewhere. It decided to stay in the inner city of East Orange. I've never been there, but I understand that to go to East Orange, New Jersey, is sort of like going to a third world country. And they've had enormous financial problems. Hired a new president 2 years ago who really began to turn things around, but the financial problems were so severe that it appeared that Uppsala was facing bankruptcy within the next few months. And so Uppsala went to its sister ELCA institutions and asked if they would be willing to participate in putting together a loan to the institution. The trend is good. The enrollment is going back up. Giving is going back up. Financial management is getting stronger. Corporations are getting interested in Uppsala, but they were going to run out of cash during this calendar year unless something was done. And at least five of the ELC institutions, including St. Olaf, have agreed now to lend Uppsala $200,000 out of our endowment. That will be an endowment investment. In order to try to help get them through this year, because we are convinced that the ELCA ought to have a college in East Orange, New Jersey, that it ought not to abandon that ministry in that community. You talked about the ministry, and that's a place where the church really is in ministry, is with a college in East Orange, New Jersey. I'm really very pleased about that. I think that's a nice expression of the way the colleges actually come together and try to work together and see each other as having a common mission. Okay, we talked about lots of Lutheran students earlier. Turning the coin on the other side, I'd ask you to guess what fraction of Lutheran ELCA 18-year-olds who go to college, what fraction of ELCA 18-year-olds who go to college go to ELCA colleges? If we're going to have lots of Lutheran students, then Lutheran students have to come to our colleges. What percentage would you say? It's not quite that low. Not quite. 15%. 15%. Of ELCA college-going 18-year-olds go to ELCA colleges. And I guess, one of the things I want you to understand about me, I did not go to a Lutheran college. I spent the first 25 years of my administrative career in big public research universities, secular institutions. So I have a deep appreciation for other institutions of higher education in America. But I do worry about that figure. And if that figure keeps going down, then I worry about the future of the church. For exactly the point. I have talked to pastor after pastor after pastor who has said, if you look at the lay leadership in our congregation, it's people who came out of the church college. Right. And some of that is self-selecting. I mean, not all of that is because the church colleges did a good job. It's because people who have a kind of interest in the life of the church probably would tend to maybe to think about a church college before they would a secular institution. So some of that is self-selecting. I do understand. But I am deeply concerned about the future of the church, as you may hear tomorrow. I worry about this figure. And so if there's any piece of propaganda I would like to send you back to your congregations with, it is the ELCA colleges are very good colleges. We, in fact, are the only, aside from the Missouri Synod, we are the only Protestant church left that has church colleges. I mean, you can go to campuses that say we're a Presbyterian college, but there is no mark of being a Presbyterian college. The Presbyterian college presidents meet once a year. I have a good friend who's the president of one of them, and I say, why do you do that? And he says, I'm not sure. They get no support from the church. They have very little interest in church connections. They don't put on conferences on theology for pastors. They don't have connections with seminaries. They don't have, as we do, a pre-seminary task force to try to encourage young people to be interested in the ordained ministry of the church. They don't have chapel. They don't have required religion. And I'm not knocking the Presbyterian colleges, but the same is true of the Methodists. Maida and I both went to Northwestern University, a Methodist institution. Its motto is quae cumque sunt vera, whatever things are true, you know, from Philippians, is it? Paul's letter to the Philippians. I mean, you could live on that campus for 4 years and not have the foggiest notion that it had any relationship to any church whatsoever. Carleton College in Northfield, Minnesota used to be church-related. They hired a new chaplain. They still have a chaplain in Carleton. A professor on the search committee said that the problem with the finalists for chaplain was they all believed in God. He wanted a chaplain who didn't believe in God. I mean, that would be broadening for Carleton. Well, I mean, and I mention this because the ELCA still has church colleges, and it has very good church colleges. You can get a very good education at Lutheran, Gustavus, and Wittenberg. And they are not as expensive as you might think. So I really encourage people to think about the church colleges as options for young people from the congregations. Many congregations are giving scholarships for members of their congregation who go on to anyone. I got a letter, wonderful letter, from a pastor of a church in Omaha. I sent it out to all 29 presidents. He wanted the presidents to know their congregation set up a new program in which they will give a $1,000 scholarship to any member of their congregation who attends any one of the 29 Lutheran colleges. I say, terrific. I mean, what a wonderful way of trying to ensure an educated leadership for the church. Final point I want to talk about, all of the ELCA colleges that we've mentioned, all 29 of them, get some money from the church. And I'm going to ask you to guess, overall, for all 29 institutions, what percentage of the college's budget comes from the church? And I mean, through the formula of benevolence giving, I'm not talking about individual Lutherans who are alums of Wartburg and write a check to Wartburg. But through the organized benevolence gifts that you put in the offering plate on Sunday morning, what percent would you guess of the Luther College budget or the Dana College budget or the St. Olaf College budget comes from that money?
15%?
15, I got 15 over here.
30
over here.
8?
5? You're getting closer. Believe it or not, it is. It is 0.7%. 0.7%. The budget of St. Olaf College for next year will be approximately $60 million. If we're lucky, we will get from the ELCA $250,000. But we will be at about 0.6. No, we'll be about 4, we'll be about 4.5 cents actually of 1%. The average, this in fact was a 1990, this was a 1990 figure, and the amount has been cut in each of the next 2 years, so probably it's down to around 0.5, it's down to around 0.5% right now. So this is fine.
Does that include synodical funds?
It includes synodical funds, because the synodical funds go through Chicago and get reallocated. So if you go to a synod convention and you see a line item for colleges and universities in Region 5, that's included. The total amount in dollars from the ELCA for all institutions, synodical and ELCA, is about $5 million. In 1989, just 3 years ago, it was nearly $6 million. So it has been declining in absolute dollars. At the time of the merger, it went up briefly for a year, and then it started down, and it's been going down ever since. And tomorrow, one of the things we'd like to talk about is, in the light of this, and some other things that are happening in the church, what is going to be the future of the church-related colleges? If somebody comes to Holden and gives this talk 30 years from now, will there be 29 colleges to put on the board? And if so, what will they look like? Questions, comments?
I just have, is the largest of all those 29?
The largest, it depends a little bit on how you count. But POU is probably the largest. A lot of the students at POU are part-time, but is probably the largest. I'm going to pass around. I would like these back sometime. Here's an interesting little directory of all the church colleges put out by the Division for Higher Education. And if you're interested in that, you see it has little profiles of all the colleges. But POU and St. Olaf is close. But POU is a little larger than we are, and they go down. I think the smallest are probably Dana and Midland. POU and St. Olaf are in the kind of 3,000-ish range.
Again, for POU, is that because it's the only one over here?
Absolutely.
That has a lot to do with it.
Absolutely. And Dana and Midland are in about the 500 range. I think I have full-time enrollments here. And I think that's about right. Most of them are in the range 1,500 to 2,500. That's the typical size. Other questions?
How many have graduate programs? Do you know?
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer. Most of the ones in the upper Midwest do not. Capital has a law school. POU has graduate programs. My guess is that 6 or 7 of them have master's programs. None offer PhDs, and I believe that the law school at Capital is the only professional school. Yeah, I did do a little quick survey of that. Faculty salaries is the largest single component in the budget. And at St. Olaf, we are very high in that about 50% of all of our expenditures go directly for instruction. That's very high in the nation. But that also funds, of course, the operation, maintenance, the physical plant, student services. It funds financial aid for students and a whole bunch of other things. But faculty salaries, that's the single, we are very labor intensive colleges, and faculty salaries is the biggest single item. Okay, I think we are just on time, and tomorrow we're going to talk about the future of the ELCA colleges, and I will try to control myself. Thank you.